So, as I said, today we continue our summer sermon series on the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. And today we're taking our second look at the story from Nehemiah. The books of Ezra and Nehemiah focus, as you recall, on the return of the Jewish exiles from their captivity in Babylon. In 597 BC, the armies of the Babylonian Empire defeated Judah. They destroyed Jerusalem, and they carried many of the elite members of the nation back to serve in Babylon. 58 years later, the Persians, led by King Cyrus, defeated the Babylonians, and King Cyrus allowed the Jews to return home to Judah. In the book of Ezra, tells of the first and second waves of returnees and the rebuilding of the great temple in Jerusalem. Then, approximately 50 years after those events, we come to the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah was a Jew living in Babylon. He was a descendant of those exiles who were taken from Jerusalem. His job in Babylon was serving the king as the king's cupbearer. He was sort of a personal assistant, butler, slash secretary. He was very close to the king and his family. Nehemiah one day gets word from his brother Hanani that Jerusalem is still in shambles. And Nehemiah refers to Jerusalem as the city of his ancestors' graves. In Jerusalem, the walls are still torn down, and the people are disgraced. Nehemiah, he goes to the king, and he makes a request. He asks permission to return to Jerusalem for a period of time in order that he might rebuild the city. The king approves this request and names Nehemiah governor of Judah. Nehemiah makes the journey back to Jerusalem, and he takes up residence there. He makes a midnight trip. On the third night that he's there, he makes this midnight trip around the city, secretly surveying the city walls. The next day, he calls the city leaders together to share with them his plan to restore the city. He says to them, "You see the trouble that we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we may no longer suffer disgrace." Now, I covered all of this in my previous sermon, how the leaders then agreed with Nehemiah's plan and how everyone adopted a gate or a section of wall to rebuild. Today, in chapter 4 of Nehemiah, we discover how dangerous it was for the Jews to attempt to rebuild the wall of the city. Earlier, we had learned that there was some opposition to the Jews rebuilding Jerusalem. So allow me to take a moment to describe the political landscape. In the Persian Empire, each area or region was ruled by a governor. And governors then reported to satraps who oversaw each province. And Judah was in the province known as the province beyond the river. The nations around Judah also had their own governors, and they reported to the satrap, and the satrap reported directly to the king. Now, the two most prominent in this story are Sanballat, the governor of Samaria, and Tobiah, the Ammonite, and we're not exactly sure where he governed. But these two in the story, they're the ones that make the most noise. As neighbors of Judah, they do not wish to see Jerusalem regain its power. It is in their best interest, they feel, that Jerusalem remain weak and subservient. Jerusalem, well, it had once been a regional power, But now it was just a no man's land that anyone could exploit. In the Old Testament, Psalm number 80 describes the situation in Jerusalem like this, when the psalmist asked God, "Why then have you broken down its walls so that all who pass along the way pluck its fruit?" A fortified Jerusalem would become a competing power to Samaria and the others. So, when word gets out that the Jews are going to rebuild the wall, Sanballat becomes angry. And he mocks the Jews, saying, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore anything?" He even asks if they have the will to make the sacrifices that they're going to need to rebuild the wall. "How long is it going to take?" he asked. "Do they think they're going to just get this done in a day?" And then Tobiah, the Ammonite, in a bit of comic relief, he chimes in saying that the walls they're building, they're so weak that if a fox were to climb on top, it'd just all fall down. Nehemiah hears these taunts from his opponents, and he prays. He prays to God, saying, "Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their taunt back on their heads and give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover their guilt. Do not let their sins be blotted out from your sight, for they have hurled insults in the face of the builders." The Jews begin rebuilding, and very quickly they restore the wall. Well, they get up about halfway. And as work progresses, the neighboring governors grow angrier and angrier, and they plot to disrupt the work that's taking place. But in response, Nehemiah reports that he and his people, they've done two things. One, they pray. They pray to God. And two, they set up guards as protection. One of their leaders, one of the Jewish leaders, points out that the people are growing exhausted from all this work, and that the work on the wall leaves them exposed to potential attacks. The Jews who live outside the city express their fear at being attacked in their homes. So Nehemiah develops a plan. He stations armed guards with every group of workers, and he reminds them what they are fighting for. They're fighting for their families, their sons, their daughters, their homes. And half the people worked, while half the people stood guard. And then they would change positions. And even those who were working carried a weapon with them at all times. They were always on alert. And because the work was spread so thinly around the city, Nehemiah had a trumpeter ready to sound the alarm in case of any attack. At the sound of the trumpet, everyone was to rush to the point and oppose the attackers. In face of this persistent threat, Nehemiah reminds the people. He says, "Our God will fight for us." And the work continued. Now, unfortunately, the threat to the city was not just from the outside. Inside the city were some who were aligned with Tobiah, the Ammonite. He had married a woman from Jerusalem. And even worse were the economic hardships imposed upon the people. Rebuilding the wall, it was expensive. And people had to take time away from their businesses and their fields. And on top of that, the taxes to the king still had to be paid. The wealthy in Jerusalem, they were willing to make loans to those in need, but they were doing so at crippling interest rates. So Nehemiah, when he learns of all this, he confronts the nobles and the officials and convinces them to stop charging interest on the loans and to return any property that they have seized. And then furthermore, in chapter 7, we read of various plots to discredit Nehemiah or even to kill him. However, despite all these obstacles and setbacks, the wall, surprisingly, is completed. We are told it took the people 52 days. Now, don't think it's any great wall. Modern archaeological evidence tells us that the wall they built was neither pretty nor particularly strong. In time, they would improve it. But for then, it was enough. It was enough to protect the city, to eradicate the shame that the people felt, to allow them to become a place where God could reside fully. Back when Nehemiah first asked his king for permission to rebuild Jerusalem, his objective was not simply to construct walls and gates. He wanted to restore the community. This was a community that for generations had been beaten down and humiliated. And while the temple itself, it had been rebuilt in the city, but the people continued to suffer fear and disgrace. We, as God's people, we are called to identify the injustices in this world and to work to eradicate them. We are called to bring healing and wholeness to broken communities, to lift up shattered lives, to bring grace to the disgraced. However, when we do engage in these acts of justice, we are guaranteed at some level to encounter opposition and threats. In those moments, we can choose to back down or to stand strong. You know, you may ask, who would oppose doing God's work? Well, there are lots of people. Anyone who feels threatened by justice and righteousness. Injustice, as we all know, makes people rich. It gives them power. Justice threatens that. And Nehemiah teaches us that to do God's work, well, sometimes we need to stand double duty. To do the work itself, but also to stand guard against those who oppose us. The work that we are called to do is numerous. It's aiding the hungry and the homeless, to protect the refugee and those whose lives are smothered in violence, to visit the prisoner, to care for the sick, to love the forgotten. The list goes on and on. Our calling is to confront injustice in all its forms. And we are to do this selflessly as children of God, as followers of Jesus Christ. But one last thing. In the story, did you notice that those builders in Jerusalem, despite all the opposition, the taunts and the mocking, they never had to fight, did they? They never had to lift their swords. Yes, they were armed, but they also did what? They prayed. It turns out that their prayers were far more effective than their weapons. You remember Nehemiah's promise to his people? He said, "Our God will fight for us." And apparently, God did. So, when you come to church, you want to be well armed? If so, you don't need to carry your Smith & Wesson. Let your prayers be your concealed weapon of choice. Amen.